from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, that would be me, and you're you, and Adam's Adam, and we're all one. So I don't even know what we're doing here. Oh, I think we'll probably do a radio show and play around and have some fun with Adam Bergstrom the first Monday of the month. And that would be May 7th, 2018. And this is Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. The calm before the storm, thanks. We're going to do a little bit of spring cleaning, body detox cleansing stuff with Brandon Amalani, who's a Chinese medical guy and makes some of the products we promote, some great stuff. And we're going to be talking about turmeric and all kinds of cool things with Brandon tomorrow. And also tomorrow, Konstantin Monasterski is back. I've been speaking quite a bit with him over the last couple of weeks off the air. And I read a whole chapter in his book because the subject came up then when he was talking about, we were talking about my tummy, and then I read this whole chapter on his book about water, and so we're going to talk about water tomorrow. He's a crazy Russian guy, and he's a real trip, Monasterski, but quite well-researched and a smart guy, I think, and he says that most people are drinking too much water, which is contrary to the popular opinion that everybody's dehydrated, and he'll tell you why tomorrow. Adam Bergstrom, who is the head guy, along with his partner in crime, Vibrant Gal, in solartiming.com, and he had the book, Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition, and also SunSync Nutrition, and he does a show with us once a month. He's in Montecito, California, and he lives right next to Oprah, where they have tea and crumpets most afternoons. How's Oprah?
Super gruvalistic, prosopontificacious, I guess. She's 3 miles away, but Ellen is only right across the street, basically.
Really? Ellen, too. You're there with all the Hollywood starlets.
Yeah, they're all here.
Really?
So when this is called Hollywood North.
It's Hollywood North, huh? Cause it's,
that's what you call it.
Yeah, just down the road from L.A., La La, right?
Yep, pretty close. Montecito was too snooty for the Hollywood crowd until Robert Mitchum managed to insert himself here due to his wife being a debutante, and then they let him in.
Well, you know, all the dirt, I guess. All the dirt up there. Yeah, so when I become a big famous movie producer screenwriter, I just may have to, I have to check it out, you know, and buy myself a... Well, out there, of course, to buy yourself a little anything is about $10 million. So maybe I won't move there.
Prices are reduced because it's a quarry now with big boulders and houses.
Oh, yeah, because you guys did the
property where a house used to be, cheap.
You guys did the whole mudslide thing, didn't you?
So the Bay Area is more expensive even than Montecito now.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Dr. Thomas Cowan lives in the Bay Area, and he's going to be here on Thursday. We love Dr. Cowan. Heart is not a pump guy. We're going to talk to him some more. He's fun to talk to.
And I also have a book called The Heart is Not a Pump.
Do you really?
Based on the original research by Dr. Rodemond, who started it all way before it got known. Actually, it was known before the Civil War.
Well, Dr. Rodemond, how do you spell that name, Rodemond?
R-O-D-E-R-M-U-N-T. He's notorious in Wisconsin because he didn't believe in smallpox. So he rubbed it all over himself, rubbed it all over his family, and ran downtown and rubbed it over all the people at the country club and got arrested.
Really? I mean, and when was he around? 1800s?
Yeah, the 1898. He first wrote his books on The Heart Is Not a Pump in, let's see, 1898, somewhere like that.
I'll be
and
done.
He was rejected because by then the brainwashing was that the heart is a pump.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's more like a carburetor than a pump. Yeah. You need a carburetor in your car. It's not like you don't need it.
So that's probably where, so this is where a lot of the, what Colin talks about started, you think? He said it went way back, but he never mentioned Rodomont.
Yeah, he popularized it. Mm-hmm. Colin may not even know about Rodomont.
Yeah, I mentioned it on Thursday, yeah.
From Rudolf Steiner, so you might mention his name.
Yeah, Colin's a big Steiner fan. You know, he grows all of his vegetables, the Steiner method, you know, the ones that they dry, you know, and do the powders. And he finds people doing the Steiner. He's a big Steiner fan. 1898, boy, they must have thought he was wacko saying the heart's not a pump back there.
They did, but there were doctors saying that was true before the Civil War. That's the furthest I've been able to track it back, and probably further, too.
So from your perspective, Adam Bergstrom, on this Monday morning, if you'd like to join the show before I ask Adam a question, it is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. You know, you just know so much and been researching health for so long. What's the significance of this Rodomont's work that Dr. Cowan is just talking about? He's one of the few guys really out there talking about it, other than you. What do you think the significance for our listeners? What does that information mean for them, do you think, with their lifestyle and diet and such?
Stay away from heart doctors. They don't know diddly squat.
That's right. I didn't know you were going to say that one.
Yeah, they really don't. When they tell you you need heart surgery, run for the hills. Even show up. You know, Dr. Cowan has gone into that in detail, that you can have 2 or 3 or 4% blockage and grow new vessels. Angiogenesis, there's actually 3 types of agenesis, the veins, arteries, and adjacent particles, because we don't even need hemoglobin to get oxygen into our body. A lot of people know that. Under pressure, if you took a person that had no blood, no red blood cells at all, and put him in a hyperbaric chamber, and especially if you add a little carbon dioxide, he can be fine without any red blood cells whatsoever.
Dr. Cowan has said that when they go in and crack a chest, you know, to do something, and now they're able to do it, I think, without opening the chest every time. But I don't know, you know, what they do now exactly. But he says once they do that too, that usually breaks all the things you talked about. They call them genesis, all the arteries and veins that have formed around the big guys to keep everything happy. And he said that will break them if you allow them to open up your chest like that.
To put it mildly, it discourages it for sure.
Yeah.
Scar tissue, it's called. Huh. And scar tissue can be eliminated, but on the typical Western diet involving polyunsaturated fatty acids and a whole bunch of wrong eating, dietary indiscretions, then it won't heal. You can't get rid of scar tissue.
So do you think these guys go back after, if somebody would get their chest kind of cracked open? Do you think they'll try again?
You can heal that, but it takes a dietary changes to do that and lifestyle changes.
No, I mean to grow the arteries back.
Oh, yeah, you can grow it back. But
they'll go back.
It discourages that, but you can definitely grow arteries back. Think of it. We started as 2 cells, and we grew this whole body, and we can't grow a few arteries or a few
arteries. Right. Yeah. Plus, I mean, look at like the elk. We talk about the elk velvet antler. These guys grow a whole new long 4-foot thing every year, and it's just like another, whatever we call it, just like another arm or leg.
we have that capacity, but because we eat certain ways, we discourage the process. We put poison on it. Even speaking of water, I'm for this person that's going to be on. Less water, the better, because just drinking a quart of water or even a couple of glasses can make you alkaline in 5 minutes. Hmm. And to become acidic again takes 3 days.
Because it dilutes the stomach acid.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
More than that, see, even many people have heartburn because they take water with their meal. 1/4 cup, that's only 4 ounces of water at 50 degrees, will stop the digestive process in the stomach for 1/2 hour. That's 50 degrees. Meanwhile, we have people drinking iced tea. I see a lot of that in Texas, where the temperature is 32 degrees. In fact, how chefs measure their thermometers, calibrate them, is they fill a glass of water with ice and wait 3 minutes, stick their thermometer in, and it should read 32 degrees. Meanwhile, Coca-Cola Company recommends that you drink Coca-Cola at 36 to 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Beers are about 44, depending on whether it's a lager or an ale. And all of these stop digestion for a half hour to an hour at a time.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Monastreski, and you'll hear him tomorrow, he claims that all this water that people are drinking throughout the day is really hurting the whole thing. And he said the whole 8 glasses a day got just totally knocked out of whack. And you've said before that all the food that you eat, that counts as water, you know. Coffee that you drink, that counts as liquid.
It unstructures your water. Yeah. In plain water, actually drinking too much of any kind of liquid.
Sure.
In fact, the hardest thing to digest from the stomach is juice. Huh? So much for Jim Carrey as the juice man, right?
I'll be done. Yeah. So you don't do extra water at all unless you're thirsty?
If I had nothing else and needed liquid, then I would drink plain water, but I would try to put something else in it to convert it from plain water. Otherwise, I would become, as Emmanuel Ravisi called it, ammoniocelic, which means my water would get unstructured and I would become catabolic.
888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. So I'm on my building my muscle mode, right? So I weigh myself. And so it was really funny. Last night I was 128.4, and this morning I was 127. Hmm. So I did the calculations by the weight of water at 8.34 pounds per gallon. So I lost 21 ounces of weight when I slept last night. Okay, so and I didn't even do a sauna last night, which is unusual. Where did that water go? It's just, so you do, we just kind of sweat out. I just sweated out 21 ounces just by lying there?
Sweat it out, or the problem is it goes into the interstitial fluid.
Yeah, but you'd still get that weight on the scale. It went somewhere, left the body.
Yeah, but it goes into the interstitial fluid. It's still in you.
No, well, if it was still in me, it would still have the same weight.
The same weight as you had. Yeah, because it only weighs a few ounces. But then how do you explain when
Hold on a sec. I was 128.6 last night before bed. Wake up this morning and 127. Exactly. I got a very accurate scale to the point. So 21 ounces of something left my body while I slept.
Yep. Gas.
Okay. I didn't have gas. Oh, I was sleeping. I could have. I didn't know. I didn't have 21 ounces of gas. Really?
Where does fat go when you lose it? What happens to it?
I don't know. You tell me.
86% carbon dioxide, 14% water. That's fat, and that's how we lose it. But what they don't know, and the Australians are the ones who found this information out, It's all over the internet now, they don't know that you can get it the same way. So that's why circus performers used to breathe and turn from a skinny guy into a fat guy in an hour or less, and then breathe a certain way and release it. That's the whole secret of yawn.
So when we weigh less, you know, it's a lot, 21 ounces. You're saying somehow 21 ounces worth of gas left during the night?
Well, I drank 4 ounces of water, of cold water, after a workout at the gym and gained 4 pounds. Where did that come from?
Yeah, you've told me that before. I've tried that. I've never experienced that myself, but I'd like to. I mean, 4 ounces of muscle after you do your thing.
Except it's weakened muscle, because strong muscle is the kind like, what was his name, Wiley, the so-called breatharian. Even though he wasn't a breatharian, here was this skinny guy lifting huge amounts of weights that really flummoxed the bodybuilding jocks at the gym.
I hate to get flummoxed like that. So, I mean, but so when you sleep, though, I guess you also, you must perspire and lose moisture out of your skin, too.
You do. Most people lose it, but some people wake up heavier.
Really?
In fact, I know people who have gone to sleep and wake up gaining as much as 50 pounds.
No.
Where does that come from? My friend Serena Ripple.
50
some people,
pounds? Come on. That's not possible.
Right. 50 pounds. 50 pounds of weight. She called me up and said, the doctors have given up on me. I've gained 100 pounds of what they call water weight, and I can't lose it. What can I do? So I told her certain things to do, including eat on time, which she should have known because she studied with O'Donnell herself. And she lost that 100 pounds in a matter of a couple of days.
Well, I'd have to see the 50-pound thing to believe that one.
Well, it's also an autobiography of a yogi, where
really?
Paramahansa Yogananda. But, you know, that's the yogis. Those are special people. But Yogananda gained, actually, his teacher, Sri Yukteswar, gained 50 pounds overnight.
Did he really? He probably went to McDonald's like Wiley the breatharian.
Even before that. One of the main problems that Otto Warburg warned us about is fermentation. And fermentation happens in the stomach when you introduce any kind of liquids with your meals.
Yeah.
That's why juices and soups and things like that stymie the digestion and cause fermentation, which we used to call disfermentation when I was a colonic therapist, but it's plain old fermentation.
If you
fermentation
like to...
basically is burning sugar in the absence of oxygen. You can't get around it. So when people tell you to take fermented foods, it's actually lactic acid and is counterproductive to digestion.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's really interesting. I never did well with fermented foods until I figured out my body didn't like them. I don't do good with them at all. I don't know.
Some are worse than others. And what it causes, when fermentation occurs in the stomach, we're taught that H. pylori is there. There's actually thousands of different bacterial species that live and mold species that live in the stomach when you don't have the proper acidic digestion.
Indigestion, right. But then, the Western Price people, they're the ones that are all into this fermentation thing, man. They're into it.
Yep. One of them mentioned that that their fermented cod liver oil is actually rotten cod liver oil, and they got excommunicated.
Yeah, well, you just got to, you know, it's just, there's a lot of people out there saying a lot of stuff, and just because somebody has a big organization like Weston Price or something doesn't mean that, you know, the Ayurvedic tradition of my doc years ago said, man, don't do any of that fermented stuff. That's the worst thing for your stomach. He said, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do vinegar. Don't do any of this stuff. He said, not good.
The fermentation is what happens to the stomach when it's not working properly. Mm-hmm. And then it develops the habit, and it's really difficult for people to get it out of the habit. We can get away with it for the first 30 years of life. And I'm talking now biological stage. I'm not talking age.
Right, biological.
30-year synchrony. Some people call it a Saturn return for our health. Thirty years of being a kid, 30 years of being middle age, and 30 years of being a hyper kid.
Hyper kid.
We become over acid. We tend to be overly acid as a child, overly alkaline in middle age, and overly acid again as an adult. If you can keep it in the right places, you'd be healthy. But unfortunately, we become acid in all the wrong places and alkaline in all the wrong places. And that means part of us turns into a jellyfish and the rest of us turns into a rock or a table through fibrosing. Fibrous tissue like collagen starts to solidify, and you can even turn to stone. It started to happen to me when I was a child, but fortunately the spot only got about the size of a nickel. And I went to the doctor and he took basically a soldering gun and eliminated it.
Oh yeah, that's what I would do. Let's get rid of it. Yeah. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com with Adam Bergstrom. Are you still writing more stuff on the yellow fat thing?
Yeah. You know, I actually took a recess. I got in a debate with Dr. Jack Cruz and wrote about a quarter of the book related to that. And then I moved on to yawning, as you may have noticed.
Yeah, I know. You got like how many different blogs on yawning now?
13. I wrote one about heartburn, the last one I did, to kind of take a little hiatus so people don't get too bored with yawning.
Yeah. Boy, it is amazing, though. I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you should read some of these blogs, because when you yawn and stretch, there's just something, I don't know, something's really going on with that, isn't it, Adam? I mean, it is, it's like, I don't know, it's like, just relieves, it just loosens up a lot of tension in your whole body. Wow.
We have known since 1921 or so that just by yawning, you could take a paralyzed person and unparalyze them. That's in blog number 12, I believe, in How to Yawn.
I believe it. I believe it. You can feel some things going on. Okay, we're right here and with you, and we're going to have a fun time this morning. And we were talking about the elks and they grow this thing. Here's a check it out from Sir Thrival. You might want to get some of this great stuff. I had some this morning. Don't I look all elky and all? Do I look elky? Previously with Daniel Vitalis, talking about elk velvet antler from Sir Thrival.
Elk antler or deer antler products are probably the most regenerative substance that we can find in nature, at least for mammals. A couple things that I think are really cool about it is that it's got six types of collagen.
That's really
amazing. When you think about the antler of an elk or a deer, these are an organ that grow in just 3 months' time and then fall off, and the very next year they grow back. Mammals don't typically regenerate organs that fall off, but antlers from all of the cervid mammals are completely regenerated. In order for them to regenerate, they need to contain substances that cause regeneration, and that's like the 24 growth factors that we find in elk velvet antler.
Regeneration, we like that word. Growth factors, we love that word. For boys and girls, that's you. Exclusively from Sir Thrival and exquisitely produced, Daniel Vitalis, OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, baby. We've been getting some fun little things in on the sulfur. If you'd like to get some, like, here's his name? Lee says, we've been buying your sulfur from you for about 5 years, and my wife loves it too. 5 years. Here's another one. This is from Tan. I always email people when I tell them the order's on the way and they got another order. She said, Tan said, yeah, so far so good. I found the sulfur to be energizing even on the first small dosage. Even on the first small dosage. It's pretty cool. It's a great product. I don't know if you had a chance to hear Judy Hoy, but she was talking about the necessity of it, too, with all of her work. And there I can actually begin to give some to the animals up there with the glyphosate poisoning, because it really helps with that. So there's some cool stuff going on with sulfur. If you'd like to try some, ours is really nice. It's a pure sulfur. It's a 99.9%, just poof. And they have the different analysis on each batch, and it doesn't have anything else in it, and it's just really the way you want to go with sulfur. When you get different additives in there, like silicone dioxide and stuff, it's just kind of yuck, and it's not a good thing to do, and it just kind of makes it not work as well. Ours costs a little more because it's just a pure deal, and we have some special sources that'll grow little things in the bottom of the glass. You know, it's alive. If you'd like to order some. Just click and order on the front page of One Radio Network. People have been ordering for years, and they just love it right on the front page. If you like more than 4 pounds, email me.
We're with Al Carter. He's one of the top authorities on rebound exercise. Now, you talk about G-force and really leveraging being one of the most effective forms of exercise. Can you explain why that is?
Yes. With rebound exercise, we're using two other forces that are natural, the force of acceleration and the force of deceleration in a vertical mode. They come together with gravity at the bottom of the bounce, which means that you're developing a greater G-force effect at the bottom of the bounce, and the cells of the body have to become stronger, and they really don't have a choice.
So then you're using this idea of going up in the air and coming back down as actually increasing the force on your body.
It increases the force on the body, on every cell in the body, regardless of where it is, which means that you're not only exercising the muscles, you're exercising the bones, the involuntary muscles, the muscles of digestion and elimination, and even the cells of the eyes.
The Rebound Air Rebounder. We think the best with a lifetime warranty. Click and order, front page, or in our store, OneRadioNetwork.com.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, thanks, Francis Alva. We all love old Francis Alva, I tell you what. Do you remember when they used to have FSLIC on all the banks out there on the windows? FSLIC, you know?
I do.
And I used to think that that meant that Frank Sinatra lives in Southern California, but it doesn't. It doesn't, right?
Lived in Vegas.
So you grew up with these. All this fake news stuff. Got some good emails for Adam Bergstrom. If you like to ask a question, we'll play around. So this is somebody sent me that they wanted you to comment on. Well, it's Bill Sardi. Do we know Bill Sardi? Where's that name? Do you know him, Bill Sardi?
Almost sounds familiar.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Researchers at a medical college in Georgia have discovered a nerve center in a cell layer in the spleen that controls the immune response and therefore inflammation throughout the body, giving the virtually all chronic related ageist disease involves inflammation called inflammaging, blah, blah, blah. So they're doing this. The striking discovery is that autoimmune reactions responsible for chronic inflammation throughout the body were quelled by consumption of 2 grams, which is a half a teaspoon of baking soda per day for 2 weeks in healthy humans. Researchers say baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, calms the immune response in the spleen and has a system-wide effect. Huh? What do you think about that?
It does, as long as you don't take it by mouth.
Well, how else would you take it?
Well, you simply take salt, and the salt goes into the stomach. The sodium disconnects from the chloride. The sodium joins with carbon dioxide and becomes sodium bicarbonate in the duodenum. Meanwhile, the chloride connects with simple hydrogen in the liquid in the stomach and forms hydrochloric acid. And that's how you do it. Otherwise,
oh, man, that is so cool. It's so nice to have a man around the house, isn't it? Gosh, it's just great. Wow, how did you know that?
Yeah.
that's hilarious.
Doctors new, what they did is they used sight and touch and smell and things like that.
Right.
That's why Wikipedia is very useful as long as you call it Wikicepia. In other words, you look at things, because once Wikipedia starts commenting on things you personally or we can't personally see, then they go astray. But they are really good about things that you can see. Like if I want to find out how tall an almond tree is, I simply look it up on Wikipedia and it's going to be accurate.
Sure.
But when you say why it's that tall, you know, the heart,
right.
The tree doesn't have a heart, right? And look, it pumps fluid 300 feet in the air in a redwood tree, and it can't, the arteries in our own body and the veins can't pump fluid 6 foot tall.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. So when we take salt, good salt, it does the same thing to the immune system and the spleen, is what you're saying. And if you do baking soda, where it might work in a study of some kind, which is, you know, might work, it's not a good thing because it's diluting the stomach acid, isn't it?
Exactly.
If you take it in your mouth, yeah.
Same thing. You might as well take a proton pump inhibitor.
That's right. You might as well take, you know, the purple pill or something, huh?
Now, for certain things, when you're not eating and you're an athlete, taking it can actually give you a little more run in your marathon race. But frankly, a lot of times people are breaking their tissue down by marathon racing anyway, so maybe they should think twice about that too.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have anything to do with digestion, it blocks digestion. But salt goes in there, makes the hydrochloric acid, and makes the bicarbonate, two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. Yeah.
That's why sodium is the youth mineral. You know, Bernard Jensen called it that, and he was correct, because our flexibility in our body is due to sodium. We started on land with lignin. That's why trees and plants can't move. They have to be really solid. We went as resin into the ocean, added sodium, and crawl back out again. And here we are, flexible human beings, mammals, and all kinds of other birds and whatever.
Oh, so you think the whole evolutionary thing started on land, then went to the water, did our water thing, then we came back out.
Repressed science. We started in mica.
I think that's true. Well, you know, that just sounds so right to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, we see genetics has a certain amount of credence. Unfortunately, it's one floor of many floors. So what they're doing, because you can patent a gene, they stop at that level. They could stop at proteomics, glycanomics. They could stop any place they wanted at the enzyme level, but they don't, because there's money in it.
Mm-hmm.
But at that level, we started in mica, which is two-dimensional, because it's easier for genes to meet up in a mica situation, which is two-dimensional, than in a carbon situation, which is three-dimensional. So we basically started as silicone-based beans and graduated into carbon-based beans.
And we did the graduation with going into the ocean and mixing it up there for a few million years?
Yep, very similar to, we invented the automobile and then the Japanese improved it. There's no doubt that they improved it. Many of the advantages we have in modern automobiles, even if they're made in America, come from Japan now. So
sure, yeah.
That's pretty analogous to the situation of going from silica to carbon. You notice on the periodic table, they're right above and below each other.
Silica.
Same basic thing.
So carbon, how did this silica-carbon thing happen? I mean, can you explain to us like we're a two-year-old or a golden retriever?
Well, silica has a certain amount of connections, and in a two-dimensional thing, to make evolution happen, it's like two cars speeding over two-dimensional space and they can crash. Doing it three-dimensionally is like a parachutist hitting an airplane in three dimensions. Highly unlikely, much more unlikely. So they've finally figured out, and they already knew that we started on land. And yet, they'll deny this. A lot of scientists don't know that the research has been done. It's all over the internet. I've covered it in blogs on One Radio Network extensively, and in my butterflies books and elsewhere. And it's science, but the scientists often don't want us to know what's really going on. They change the names a lot of times.
Yeah, I understand that. But the silica carbon thing, can you walk us through that a little bit?
Well, silica, again, is two-dimensional because it
forms two-dimensional. What do you mean, two-dimensional?
Like mica happens in sheets, so it's like sheets. Carbon doesn't tend to do that. It tends to be in bulk. You know, it's like a scale, for instance. Now, scale usually is not a good thing. That's how glyphosate works, of course. A lot of people think Roundup and glyphosate are synonymous. They are not. Most glyphosate is used on non-GMO foods.
No, I understand. Yeah, we know that. Yeah, they're spraying it all on just non-GMO foods now too. But you're getting off base here on the carbon. I wonder. That's this two-dimension, three-dimension thing. So carbon. So why all this stuff now with C60 and all this carbon is becoming popular?
Well, we get it in food, but people want to take it as in other ways. Unfortunately, it's pretty much indigestible, and it sticks into the large intestine. It can cling up certain toxic metals, but it also clings up some very valuable metals. So I keep activated charcoal in my medicine cabinet in case of an emergency. If I swallowed a poison, I would have to take the whole bottle to actually have any
You'd have
result.
To take that much. Yeah, we interviewed this C60 fellow, and he said he's got these things that are real, very, very, very small, you know, a small nano, kind of smaller than nano. And that, let's see, how did he say it? He says that toxins will steal an electron from the molecule, right? And then that causes a problem. And this C60 product that he has in, is that it goes in there and then wipes out the or gets rid of the molecules that have been zapped by the toxins, and also some of the toxins too. And I've been taking it for about 3 weeks, this C60 product that this fellow makes, is Carbon 60. I think it's C60-com.com. And there's something going on with this. I don't know what it is, but I don't know. But I think there's something going on good. I don't know what it could be. Maybe it's just getting rid of toxins that you don't know exist.
Anything is possible. Yeah. Anything can cause anything, and anything can cure anything, as the rule goes.
Yeah, I don't know about curing, but there's something going on with this product. If you'd like to try it, we don't have anything going on. It's C60.com, and you can listen to the interview, and he's got some stuff on the website. And he says that almost all of the C60 out there is from about 3 or 4 different distributors. They all just package it up. And he went in and, as an engineer about 40 years, and came up with a way to make it super duper small, and it covers a lot big area. So maybe something to this product. We'll see. We're going to keep taking it and talk about it. And if you have any experiences with this, let us know. Adam Bergstrom is here. It is Yes, No, Maybe Chronobiotic Nutrition. So all of your other, you got so many cool books. Those are available on solartiming.com. But you don't do those in paper. Those are all just ebooks, right?
All in ebooks. Some PDFs, some that have Mobi and other things as well. And a list of things I don't quite understand. You can even get converted to audio. The instructions come with it to do that.
Really?
Only the yellow fat disease and audio would drive you crazy, because I'm really big on validating it. So I like to put all the scientists' name who did the research instead of so-and-so et al. And that gets a little boring to hear it.
Yeah, that would be
wrong. I deliberately did that because otherwise I'm the only one right now that really believes in yellow fat disease. And yet it's all over the internet, because people, rather than looking up DHA, they should be looking up yellow fat disease and see that DHA causes it, but they don't. And so I can't think of anyone except maybe Ray Pete and Danny Roddy and a few others. Brian Peskin, who really believe in yellow fat disease, and they don't really research it. And yet it's been researched enough for me to write 7 and a quarter books about it, and I could write 100 books easily. It's all over there for anybody to do. You don't even have to buy my book. You can just go look up yellow fat disease, but nobody seems to want to do it.
So it's but it's all caused by mostly by DHA, the stuff in...
DHA is a major contributor, but so is EPA and so is ALA. So flax oil, all of the polyunsaturated N3, the omega-3 oils. The omega-6 oils are probably bad for you, like they say, but I've never been able to, in all of these 7 1/4 books, been able to find a single case of yellow fat disease being caused by polyunsaturated fatty acids of the omega-6 type.
So which are the usual suspects of the PUFAs 3s, of omega-3s?
The omega-3s. Anything as soon as you see omega-3s, beware. So, and of course, now I'm not talking about the ones you buy in the supermarkets. Those polyunsaturated fatty acids are pretty much validated by Fred Kummerow and others how toxic those
are. Yeah, right, right. But the omega-3 PUFAs are, the big one is, of course, fish oil, right?
Fish oil is the big one, and that includes krill oil and oyster oil, whatever else they've got coming out of the sea. And the worst of them all, because it's a GMO product, fed high fructose corn syrup, is the algae form of DHA.
Algae form of DHA.
And they put in all organic baby formulas.
What are some of the other PUFA 3s that we don't want? Flax, right? Flax is one.
Flax and chia. And what's the other one? Oh, CBD oil.
CBD? Really?
Yeah, hemp oil, basically.
Right, but that you would just be doing a few drops or something. That's not going to give you yellow fat disease.
Yeah, a few drops. It takes time to do this. Again...
Right, but I mean, CBD oil's taken, I guess what I'm saying, Adam, it's just taken at such a low dosage.
You can neutralize it, but see, it's like taking something that is bad for you. It's like mercury in small amounts doesn't hurt you, but I could take egg white to block that, but why would I be taking the mercury supplement in the first place?
Yeah, right. So you're saying a lot of this CBD stuff is going to be a problem someday, later on?
Oh, it's the major cause of aging. It's called chronic lipofuscinosis.
No, I know that, but I'm talking about the CBD oil itself.
You'd have to take it's one of the minor
things. Okay, you'd have to take
so many N3s in their diet that it's probably, even for a person who is a fanatic and takes a lot of it, it's probably 1/100th of the N3 oils that they put in their body.
Gotcha.
So, no, gotcha. It's not going to make much difference.
So so it's mainly all the stuff that modern America is consuming, but even a lot of folks that are doing a lot of flax oil. So are the flax seeds and the chia seeds, not the oil, are they beneficial or not good to do?
You know, they're counterproductive.
Are they? You don't need them, huh?
You add the flax oil and then you take fish and you eat this and you eat that. And plus, N3 oils are in a lot of food. So strangely enough, you're more likely to get yellow fat disease from grass-fed beef than you are from the regular grain-fed, but the grain-fed gives you other types of diseases, so you're caught in the middle. We were designed to eat venison and foods like that. Venison, no matter how much you put in your stomach, digests in 1 hour. Beef and pork and things like that take about 4.5 hours. So obviously, venison...
I've heard that. Is that true? Is that really true, that much of a difference?
It's been known for 200 years.
Is it just because there are different genetic species that run around eating fruits and nuts and stuff, or what?
Well, genetics, again, is a wimpy word.
Yeah, I know. I just threw that out because I didn't know what other word to use, you know.
Heredity is real, but genes are one step. In fact, when the gene people came up with proteomics, they disproved it. And by the way, methylization. How did they get around with methylization? Methylization is how the Beaker Boys prove DNA is real by disproving it's real. Where's the logic in that? In other words, methylization changes the activity of DNA without changing the DNA. Duh.
Well, you lost me there. I don't know how you got to methylation, but I lost me. You took a left turn, and all of a sudden I ended up methylation. What are you saying?
In other words, they say that methylization changes DNA without changing it. Now, if that isn't a Zen koan, what is?
What is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not designed. If you can understand it, you're better than I, because I can't understand that kind of logic. In other words, you can DNA by not changing it.
Did you hear Dr. Ben Lynch was on, and he was talking about the people that do the 23andMe thing, and they say they're poor methylators, and they go through this, all this stuff trying to, you know, solve that problem. He said it's just a optical collusion, you know, just don't worry about it.
Said, but good methylators are more prone to cancer.
Really, it's like, you could dig in anything with a bunch of tests and Beagle Boy stuff, and, you know, you'd find all kinds of weird things going on in your body. It's just... you know what I'm saying?
If you get the wrong results as a Beaker boy, you're fired.
You're fired, yeah. Guess what? Yo, check this out. Remember, I don't know if you know, but I went ahead because I just kind of, on a whim, I did one of these food allergy test thing.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And food allergy test, you know, to see which foods I might be not, you know, good with, you know, or whatever. Reactive with, and they did the immune system thing, and I've had two people since then tell me that those things not so much, don't worry about it. Because, well, Constantine Monastreski was talking over the weekend, he said, you know, because we've been talking about flipping my diet around a little bit, and I told him about this test thing, and I showed him the results. He said, well, if you do that blood test while your stomach is inflamed a bit, which mine has been because of this ongoing thing I've been working on, you know, I've talked to you about. He said, none of those tests are, they're not valid because, you know what I'm saying? If your stomach is inflamed, then they're shooting out these antibody things that aren't normally there. So the food is not the problem. Your stomach is the problem.
You can test bad for coffee at midday and test perfectly fine for it in the morning. They don't put the circadian rhythms into it at all.
Yeah. I won't. Maybe I'll grab the thing where he said this. Just kind of. He probably explained it really good. 888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Oh, here he said, food tolerance test makes no difference at this point. When you consume anything, if you're having any kind of gastric inflammation, the body will form antibodies and test detects them.
And almost every American has gastric inflammation because fermentation is another term for inflammation.
Yeah. People not letting their stomach empty in before they eat again or getting too much protein at the wrong time. And there's all kinds of things. And is it any wonder there's 40 billion dollars worth of proton pump inhibitors sold in Tums, the number one over-the-counter medicine in the world, you know. Is it any wonder?
People know I'm fond of loopholes. So the very beef I told you about that takes 4 hours, if I just put a couple of mouthfuls in my mouth, it will digest in an hour just like venison. But as soon as I make a meal out of it, then it takes 4.5 hours.
Oh, you mean if you just eat a bite or two?
Small amounts of very small meals, you can digest almost anything in 1 hour. Mm-hmm. But when you do large meals, there's only so much stomach acid to work on the chemical. And when people are sedentary and they sit down and they don't walk, then the stomach stays at a low temperature. Again, 1/4 cup of 50-degree water will stop your digestion for a half hour.
That's pretty crazy.
That way, you get less nutrients and more weight. Where does that extra weight come from? It comes from carbon dioxide, fermentation, and excess water that is non-structured in your body. That's what ammoniocelic means, unstructured water, and uriocelic, meaning uric acid, is life-forming, or allant vital, as Henry Bergson called it.
888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, I did the deed on my tummy with all this hydrochloric acid I took for, 2 years or 3 years? I burned it up. You know what I mean? Boy, I tell you what, man. What did I know? I didn't know what I was doing that. That was crazy.
Well, it's common because they call it acid reflux, and that's where people get in trouble. Because you can just Many people have the bile come in the stomach, so that's alkaline reflux. So it depends on where it comes from. And when a person has heartburn, it's a mini vomiting. It's vomiting light. They are getting material from one half of the small intestine and the stomach, just like in vomiting. When people vomit, they're not emptying their stomach. They're emptying 10 feet, well, depending. Your small intestine is actually, while you're alive, 10 feet. When you're dead, it goes to 20 feet. It's a spring. And it's healthy. A living person has springiness in their constitution. That's why their DNA even works like a spring. It's a spiral.
Well, you know, I started eating just white rice and butter, and I'm on my third day, and my tummy's never felt better, I'll tell you. He suggests, Constantine, we're going to have on tomorrow, you could do this white rice thing with butter for about six, seven days, and your entire stomach will just totally heal up. And then you can go back and start adding foods gradually.
Excellent. After the liver flush, my friend Hugo Conti called me up and said, I have serious diarrhea and I can't stop it. And I started to talk to him. He said, you don't understand. I put one spoon of water in my mouth and it comes out my anus within 1 minute.
Wow.
This is a serious thing.
That's serious.
How did he solve it? White rice.
Did he really?
That's the only thing that will really work for the type of diarrhea where your life is at risk. Because with diarrhea, serious diarrhea, people die from it regularly.
Yeah, he said all the good foods I've been doing and all this for years, you know, the last couple of years with this heartburn thing is fine, but I just never gave my stomach a chance to heal because how I was eating, the timing of what I was eating, how much I was eating, right? Way too much protein in the morning. And he mapped it out how that was not a good thing, you know. Very interesting. I think he's on to something here. He's a wild guy. I really do. I could white rice. I mean, I like white rice with butter. I mean, what's not to like about that? I mean, it's like I could probably live on that for a long time. It's pretty good.
Very quickly.
That's pretty good. You know, it's interesting. I think the Ayurvedic people, that's one of their diagnosis oftentimes for stomach disorders is just a white basmati rice and ghee. And do that for 3 or 4 or 5 days and you're done. Isn't it amazing the stomach can heal that quickly and rebuild the lining and everything?
It can. Yeah, it can do it in a matter of days. One of the problems with it is it becomes habitual, though the stomach starts to learn. So you have to retrain your stomach because it quickly can go back once you get off the diet. But you can gradually teach it again, like you train an animal. And in some way, it's an animal, even though all is one, it's part of us.
Yeah, you could just introduce foods little by little and then see what works for it. And you can feel it, you know, if it's not happy, right? And you say, no, I don't think so. So lots to learn. We're still learning every day. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I think we had I think we had an acid reflux question here. Maybe we could continue as long as we're on that subject. Let's see. I know I saw it this morning. Going through the emails. Well, maybe not. I thought it was here, but we may come across it. Here's one for you. How did the doctor use a soldering iron to remove hardening?
Oh, it was the size. Actually, this shows how the mind interplays with the body. As a child, I read a comic book about a man who turned to stone. And guess what? It started happening to me. It's called scleroderma. But I have a local version. Some people suffer from scleroderma where their whole body starts to turn to stone. Fortunately, it was one patch on my sole of my foot. The doctor simply took a soldering iron and burned it off, and it never came back again. You know, a lot of times memories and will come back, but I guess I had enough with that one comic book and that one scare to not turn into stone. By the way, what keeps us from being metal? Why don't we use metals in our body? Some animals can use a limited amount, but it's sodium that prevents that metallic process in us to become metal. so that we can use it in enzymes, like a crab and a lobster will use copper instead of iron in its Cooper globin instead of hemoglobin.
Cooper.
And of course, they confuse people by calling it hemocyanin. They don't want you to know that there's copper in crabs and oysters and lobsters.
What could folks do who've kind of been talked into when the hip or shoulder or something or knee, and they do these titanium parts in there? Could they do something special to balance out the ill effects of that strange thing in their body?
You can shunt them with reflexology, fortunately. Mm-hmm. Once you get them in. Of course, Vibrant Gal was lucky. She broke her lower leg in three places at the ankle, and they said it would be impossible to not put that in. But what did people do? They used to heal it before all this. There's so much money in prosthetics and in these little titanium parts and stainless steel parts. So anyway, we followed what's called Wolf's Law and trusted the body would rebuild it itself without any help from the medical marauders, and she did. They also said, oh, you're going to get arthritis now for sure. But she doesn't eat inflammatory foods, so she's not going to get arthritis. If you become too alkaline, you get rheumatoid arthritis, and if you become too acid, you get osteoarthritis.
Oh, here was the one I was looking for. A couple questions. What are Adam's thoughts on help for acid reflux and silent acid reflux, aka LRP, where the gas damages the lining of the esophagus and causes hoarseness and mucus? I have a hiatal hernia too. So John's got a lot going on down there.
It will heal eventually, but you have to stop the process because...
Right.
When people see, the stomach is so much size, and what doctors say, well, it can expand. Well, as it fibroses, it loses its ability to expand. And so since that's not really a sphincter, the so-called lower esophageal sphincter is not a sphincter. You can look it up even on Wikipedia. They know that. So what does it do? It just overflows into the esophagus. And the tissue in the esophagus is not meant to handle the acid in there, and it causes Bartlett syndrome and a whole bunch of things. But once you stop, the first thing to do is eat smaller meals and do not drink any liquids with your meals, and automatically the heartburn will go away.
And maybe watch how much water, John, you're drinking throughout the day that we'll talk about tomorrow. Also, John, what you could try, I can't do medical advice, but you know what? If you got all this stuff going on, John, doesn't sound like fun. Why don't you just try the white rice thing for 4 or 5 days and see if it doesn't just straighten it out? It may, and you got nothing to lose, and it's kind of good, just white rice and butter. You could just do a Lundberg white, long grain white rice, something like that. Anyone with zero fiber, the white rices are zero fiber, and try it with butter. And then let us know, see if it helps. Because if you got all this stuff going on, got a hiatal hernia, he's got damages in the lining of his esophagus, right? Whew. Try it.
Yep, and white rice pretty much digests very quickly.
Yeah.
The butter will get in a little longer, otherwise it goes through your system very quickly. But one of the things with the grains of rice, it goes through so quickly it can actually get into your capillaries. That's called leaky gut syndrome. So if you have it, where does it leak to? It leaks into the capillaries in your own circulatory system, and some people actually have strokes and things from carbohydrate molecules not being able to pass through capillaries.
Okay.
That's why butter buffers that. As long as you have butter or some kind of fat, olive oil, coconut oil, even a bad oil will prevent that from happening.
That's why you put, I guess that's why he says put the butter on there, or the Ayurvedic people say put the ghee on there, it buffers that, huh? Yeah.
Otherwise, rice can cause a stroke. Hmm. Now, you got to eat a lot of it. This is not something that's going to happen. I'm going to eat rice and I'm going to drop over dead. This is going to take years. But longevity and fitness are two different things. You can be very fit and not have any longevity at all.
Sure. Oh, of course.
That's why meat eaters are very fit, but there's not too many heavy meat eaters that gain longevity. But there's not too many if any, vegans that gain long longevity too. It's always balanced. That's why we're called omnivores, or as I like to call them, omnivores.
Omnivores. Are you much of a monster against all this high fiber that's touted as Konstantin Monastirsky is? He said this fiber is just the menace. He's got a whole book called Fiber Menace.
It's one of the major causes of gut cancer, especially the oat bran. It's the worse than wheat bran.
Yeah,
and definitely. And see, we're designed to eat dietary fiber, but it's supposed to be in the food we eat. So if I eat like a mango and get it, then I get the mango fiber with it. But when it doesn't match, the stomach can't figure out what to do with it.
Yeah.
Adding it to your diet, it stops the blockage of nutrients too.
Well, he's suggesting too, just these high fiber diets are a problem too. These people get on these things because they're convinced fiber is good.
You can get too much high, but it's really hard to do. Most Americans do not eat a high fiber diet. Only if you ate things like mangoes, prunes. And how many people eat a prune diet all day?
Mango. So that's why prunes make you go poop. They're just high in fiber, huh? I see.
That's it. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons. It also has a chemical. Prunes do double duty. That's why I don't eat much. I eat a half a prune every morning. One half of one prune soaked overnight. And that way I get just a little bit of the fiber and I get the chemical action and I get the iron out of the prune that matches whatever vitamin C fruit.
So you just leave them soaked in the fridge and just take a half of one.
Right. I'm not taking it for fiber, though. I'm getting it for its nutrients, yeah.
They got a lot of good stuff in there. Iron,
And people have been, basically, in primitive diets, their stool weighs more because they have more dietary fiber in their solid food. Too little fiber is a problem, but most Americans don't get high fiber, except they go and buy a cereal product or they buy the fiber itself, and basically the fiber you buy in a health food store causes more problems and more deaths than if you just didn't buy any of that stuff.
Yeah. Marlene is in Belfast, Ireland. Hi, Marlene. Well, I'll be darned. Belfast, Northern Ireland. Hi, could you ask Adam on his thoughts of supplementing with vitamin A as in retinol palmitate and how much would be safe to take? Thank you. So Marlene's in Belfast, Ireland. She feels like she might need some vitamin A. Wants to know about retinol palmitate.
It's okay, except a lot of people don't realize that vitamin A is one of the causes of cataracts, the very thing it's supposed to be help you. But here's the thing. If you take vitamin A, make sure you're not taking any of the polyunsaturated fatty acids because it takes both to cause a cataract. You can't get a cataract from just vitamin A, and you can't get it from just polyunsaturated fatty acids. When both come together, you get a cataract. And that's pretty well known on the internet now if you find the legitimate research. And by the way, when I talk about internet, I go to medical books. I don't go to blogs.
Oh, you don't go to Facebook and find all your information there?
Oh, yeah, right. I go for my humor. You know, I got kicked off for 24 hours from saying something very innocent, which I won't even say.
What do you mean? You got kicked off of where?
Of Facebook.
Really?
I responded to someone. They said something. I said it in reverse. And they kicked me off for 24 hours, and he stayed on. I kind of think he was a shield to get me kicked off.
Who kicked? So what do you mean somebody kicked you? Like the Facebook Corporation picked you?
They kicked me off. They said, you can't come back on for 24 hours because you have sinned.
Really?
They didn't call it sin. They said, you can't use that language. You have gone above the standards. And like, what standards? Where do I read these standards? And I said something that a fourth grader would say. You know, it's very simple language, but I'm not going to go into it. But anyway, I got mad. I quit Facebook. But of course, it's hard to quit Facebook. So after 3 days, I reconsidered. And now I've decided to use Facebook instead of them using me.
Right.
So I have an approach.
So you repeated what somebody said. It was a foul language thing.
No, it wasn't even foul language. It was something very, very simple. And, well, okay, here's what it says. I said something about what was going on in Syria. Okay. And so someone wrote, Muslims kill Christians. And so I wrote, Christians kill Muslims too. And I got kicked off, and he didn't.
You got caught up in their algorithm there. You know, you got algorithmed, and they just found you, right?
You know, they have all these fake sites they allow there. Did you see the fake Donald Trump site where he says all these ridiculous things that is not even him at all, and he gets away with it?
Well, he says ridiculous things on the real sites. Just kidding. Okay.
He says both. Some of the things are ridiculous. Look, he pardoned Scooter Libby, for God's sake.
I know. Did you see that? Yeah, Scooter Libby. Yeah, he pardoned those scoots, yeah.
Dick Cheney's right-hand man.
Boy, they just want to drive this guy out of office, and, you know, the boys, and they don't care why or who, and they're just going to try to do it, and they just keep on doing it.
they're all puppets. They get fired, you know, or they get, what do you call it, they either assassinate him, or more likely they can't even think of the word here this morning. I need more Kabbalah Mentonic.
Well, we won't use the A word on here. Okay, Patrick Timpone, Adam Bergstrom. It is OneRadioNetwork.com. If you'd like to be on the show, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. I don't believe I've heard such a concise, clear explanation of what EMFs could possibly do to the body than recently with Dr. Lee Cowden.
Now, electromagnetic fields are multiply problematic because the electromagnetic fields will disrupt the membrane barriers. So it disrupts the gut barrier and allows more toxins to get from the gut into the bloodstream. It disrupts the blood vessel barrier, so you get more toxins from the bloodstream out into the tissues. It disrupts the blood-brain barrier, which allows more toxins from the bloodstream to get into the brain. And the electromagnetic fields are screwing up the electrical charge across the cell membrane. The health of a cell is determined primarily by the electrical charge across the cell membrane. But when you expose a cell to electromagnetic field, that charge across the cell membrane diminishes over time. And so the cell becomes sicker and sicker and sicker. Now, in addition, research from Europe shows that whenever you expose microbes to electromagnetic fields, they grow faster and produce more biotoxins. So we know that funguses, for example, will produce as much as 600 times more biotoxin or mycotoxin if they are outside of a Faraday cage compared to being inside of a Faraday cage in the same environment.
So as you know, the only way to absolutely be protected from all EMFs is live in a Faraday cage, but that's probably not very practical. We have the Blue Shield technology through Brandon Amalani. We think this is a very very effective ways to build your body's immunity with the cells. Look at the technology, talk to Brandon, email him, look at it closely, research it, and see what you think. Blue Shield, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with cardiologist Dr. Joel Kahn, 35 years experience in cardiology.
On your commercial break, you hit a hot button because I'm a giant fan of infrared sauna and the cardiac benefits.
Tell us about why you like these saunas for the heart. What does it do?
In Japan, it's a traditional therapy of heart disease to even sick heart patients to sit for 15 or 20 minutes in an infrared sauna, then lie down and rest and hydrate for about half an hour. They call it Waon, W-A-O-N. It means soothing heat. And they've done research studies, like 30 of them, in humans. Anti-ages your arteries and improves the strength of your heart, and it may actually prolong survival in sick heart patients. Anybody can just, again, go to the internet, read about infrared sauna heart disease, or put my name there because I've written many articles about it. Now there's data coming out of Sweden and Finland because they've published some amazing data. The number of times a week you're in a sauna, number of minutes each time, you can just track out how long you're going to live. So very powerful therapy by being in, my favorite is an infrared sauna.
Well, I don't know about you, but if the heart muscles and the arteries are happy, things are good. Very important. We promote the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. Special price, not in print, $9.95, delivered continental U.S. Get your heart and keep your heart and arteries in fine shape by using the Relax Far Infrared Sauna. email me for the special price, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. There's another big study. This is kind of cool, too. It's a 15-year follow-up study out of Finland. They're really into saunas over there. People taking a sauna 4 to 7 times a week, 61% less likely to suffer a stroke than those taking a sauna once a week. This is the first prospective large-scale study on the topic. Findings were reported in Neurology. Stroke is one of the leading causes of disability worldwide. The reduced risk associated with sauna bathing was found by a team of scientists, University of Eastern Finland, Bristol. And they got all this. I think we're going to publish that. I think Sharon's going to put this up for us. The more frequently saunas were taken, the lower the risk of stroke. Compared to people taking one sauna per week, the risk was decreased by 14% among those with 2 to 3 sessions. And as we said, 61% less with 4 to 7. Pretty cool, man. Pretty interesting. So if you'd like to get one of these saunas, this could be a very, very good thing for your health. We have the Relax Far Infrared Sauna, as you know. And just email me if you'd like to get one. We'll get it to you for contiguous 9 United States. For those of you who didn't homeschool, that doesn't include Alaska or Hawaii. But we can get it to you in Canada, Alaska, Hawaii, and we ship them all over the world at a very good price. It'll turn out to be about what you pay for the retail price of $11.95. And that's with the right plug and going to Sweden or Finland or wherever you live in Japan. We ship them all over the world. Just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, and we'll hook you up.
Good morning. This is oneradionetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
This guy loves the Cranberries. I think she comes from, we had an email from Ireland. I think she comes from Ireland, the lady. But the lead lady of the Cranberries left her body for good, I guess, a couple months ago. Just a young little girl. So I guess she's singing in heaven, Adam Bergstrom. They probably have choirs up there, right? Or wherever they do.
I would think so.
I think so. I would think so.
Interesting that so many island nations could eat fish, but they chose to eat potatoes like Okinawa and Ireland.
Yeah, why didn't they just go in the ocean and go and get some fish there?
They knew better.
Let's see. Good morning, you guys. From Patricia, she wants to know, when would be the best time for me to drink my shaga tea? Okay, good question. Shaga tea. What is shaga? Is that a mushroom?
It's a mushroom, so that is the evening, and ideally at mushroom hard-on time, which is circulation sex time, used to be called the door to immortality meridian, and so 7 to 9 is a good time.
The door to immortality meridian, and that's a sex meridian?
Yep. See, they tell you that the kidney is involved in sex, but they don't tell you what kidney. It's the right kidney, because before Americans messed it up, the original circulation sex meridian was the right kidney meridian, and the kidney meridian was the left meridian, the left kidney. But, of course, they want to confuse people. So how many American acupuncturists know that? Now, the dentists knew it. The dentist during the Civil War that used acupuncture knew the difference up until about 1910 when the Rockefeller school system came into existence.
Oh, I'm shocked there. So that's the connection, I guess, between the Hixi Wu and the different Chinese medicine herbs for sexuality stuff for kidneys, right?
A hard-on is an atomic bomb. It's called, it's the force that you see ice lift a pier right out of the ground. Frigidity implosion. It's the technical word for what a mushroom does. They're very powerful, and because they are raised among toxins, they have developed abilities to fight toxins. Basically, their intestinal tract is on the outside. Notice how they have the rugae and all of that on the outside of the mushroom, the underside of it. And that's why it's also so good for the tongue. It has a special form of B6 that looks just like the underside of your tongue, and it's a very healthy form because B6 doesn't work like a rose is a rose is a rose. There are hundreds of forms of vitamin A, hundreds of forms of vitamin B, and they all are time-linked to circadian rhythms that won't work correctly in a Faraday cage, of course, because if I'm looking at my computer in a Faraday cage, what will happen? It will flicker. I will have to depress the light down really low so it doesn't flicker. But I don't have to do that as long as I'm getting enough connection with the environment.
I've noticed that. When I go in my Faraday cage, my lights always flicker. I just notice that.
You know, it happens to truck drivers. That's why sometimes they're more prone to accidents, because they basically form in their little cabin there in their front of their 18-wheeler, a Faraday cage. I think they have ways of working with that now, don't they? I haven't followed it.
Yeah. So folks, if you want to try some Shaga Rishi, Daniel Vitalis has got a great one, and Myron Glass. I also think that Shen Blossom has a version of the Shaga. I don't know if they have both Shaga and Rishi. So anytime we want to do these guys, Adam, we want to do them at night, right? Shaga Rishi, do it at night, because they're mushrooms.
And before you eat it, hold the Shaga out in the sun, and you'll get more vitamin D than you imagine, and it will stay there for your dinner.
Oh, that's if you got a regular old Shaga you're going to eat, not a tincture.
Yeah, the tincture, probably I doubt it. It wouldn't work as well, but a whole one would. But the tincture might actually work too, depending on how much chaga is in there.
Yeah, there's a lot. But they got the Myron Glass. Does sunlight go through the Myron Glass? Not sure about that.
Probably not.
Probably have to do. That's probably the whole point, right, of the Myron.
Or Saran wrap.
Yeah,